Hello and welcome to Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today, we're going to obviously talk about the Durham report that is all over national news, what it means for Donald Trump in 2024. I'm going to take you through line by line the deal that was just struck by Washington state lawmakers. In fact, they're down in a special session right now that will make sure that drug possession remains a crime in Washington state. Imagine that. Kind of unreal that we needed a special session to get to this point. Also coming up later, I'm going to take a live citizenship test proctored by Nicole Thompson because a lot of you were saying, oh, our politicians should have to pass a citizenship test. Well, I suppose I should have to pass one too. So we'll take it live together. Later on, the parental rights fight has reached Oregon. We'll talk about protests that happened outside the Capitol down there over House Bill 2002B. And then later on, a pretty scary couple hours for a man visiting Seattle from the East Coast. And it just speaks to this larger problem of trying to not only get workers back to downtown Seattle, given the state of things, but also try to get tourism back to downtown Seattle, given the awful headlines around what's going on. Nicole, hello.
Oh, hi, Brandi.
Are you ready for this live citizenship test?
I think so.
We'll do it before we read comments, viewer comments for the day.
Okay.
So it's going to be 10 questions.
Yeah.
I'm freaked out because I was under the impression it was multiple choice, which no. I'm like, oh, nail that. It's not. And Nicole went through and picked the hardest questions.
Well, the most challenging, but not. I mean, I think it's a pretty doable test.
I don't do well under pressure.
I don't do well under pressure. That's why I'm not taking it.
All right. Anyway, okay, I look forward to that. Thank you. There is a special session that began today in Washington State, and I just actually published an op-ed. If you're not a subscriber to the show already, you can get access to our Sundays with Subscribers episode, but also op-eds that I publish explaining some of the topics in detail that we discussed on the show. If you want to become a subscriber and you're not already, it's $5 a month. You can go to undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. Click on the first little banner, subscribe to support the show. We'd love to have you. But let me take you guys through the ins and outs of kind of how we got here. I know a lot of you will already be familiar with it. We shouldn't have to be here in a special session. So 2 years ago, the Washington State Supreme Court struck down our state's felony drug possession statute. It was in a case called State v. Blake. And what they found in that case is that our drug possession statute, as it was written, was unconstitutional. And I actually agree with the ruling because it said you have to have basically lacked the word knowingly, that if somebody's, you know, got drugs on them and they're getting in trouble for drug possession, as it was, the state didn't have to prove that they knowingly possessed the drugs. And so all lawmakers in Olympia had to do after that ruling in 2021 was put the word knowingly in the freaking law. It was so easy. But no, they couldn't do that because you had this progressive wing of the Democratic Party in Olympia at the state capitol that wanted this to be an opportunity to decriminalize drugs in our state. So they just kicked the can down the road. They passed this little temporary fix that was basically nothing, but that expires on July 1st of this year. So coming up in just a month and a half. And so that's why when they did not get a permanent fix done during the regular session, they went into this special session that again began today. So that's where we are. And leading up to the special session, there had been talks about, okay, what is this deal going to look like to criminalize drug possession in our state? And so I'm going to take you through just some of the ins and outs from what we know about the deal that actually I think they're on the floor in Olympia right now, started at noon, and they're going to have caucus meetings and then come out and have a vote on this deal. Nothing is for sure until it's done, but I don't think that they would bring it to the floor for a vote again if they didn't have the votes to pass it. So here's essentially what the deal would do. It would make drug possession a gross misdemeanor. If you knowingly, key there, possess or use an illegal drug in a public place, gross misdemeanor. The first offense, you can go to jail for up to 6 months and get a $1,000 fine. If you have two or more convictions, you would face up to a year in jail. And then there is the element of it that, because really the push and pull here had been, how much of it is a stick versus a carrot? And how much of it has to be a law enforcement intervention versus treatment? Because we all would just want people to get better, right? And stop abusing drugs and stop committing crimes that come with substance abuse. So here's the element of it that is sort of the carrot. So defendants, they will be offered pretrial diversion as long as a prosecutor agrees to it. So prosecutors under this agreement would have the discretion to say, no, we're not offering this person pretrial diversion. Defendants can have their record expunged if they successfully complete the court-ordered treatment, which I think is a good thing. You go, you get better, then you don't have this thing hanging on your record that can make it more difficult to get employment, et cetera, et cetera. I really like this element of it. So when they pass, presuming that they will, this law at the state level, it would have local preemptions, which means that the state law is the law of the land in cities and municipalities and counties. They can't pass their own version of it. However, they are carving out an exception to that. So the law would allow local jurisdictions to have their own code around these quote-unquote harm reduction programs. So if you're a city with a mayor that has a little common sense and you don't want to have some of these quote-unquote harm reduction programs where you're giving out clean needles and such, you don't have to do that. So I think that's a good exception to have built into the law that's not mandated by the state. All right. And then we also, there's this little element that I want to tell you guys about because it's related to kind of something we've discussed. Remember when the city of Linwood had that opioid treatment facility just shoved down its throat without anybody finding out about it? Well, there's a part in this new proposal, the deal, that would say that opioid treatment facilities are considered essential public facilities. So it's pretty hard for a city or county to stop them. However, the State Department of Health would have to notify the media about a planned opening of one of these facilities. And so that way, the media is aware pretty early on, and hopefully the media does its job and lets citizens know, hey, this opioid treatment facility is planned for your area. So those are just a few of the details of the deal. And usually how the deals work is like the leadership agrees to them kind of in principle, and then they take them to their members, they do vote counting, and hopefully they have enough votes. But here's what I'll say. Even though I think this is going to pass today, I am looking forward to an accounting of who votes against it. I think that you are still going to have some very progressive members of the House and Senate Democratic caucuses who think that this bill goes too far in criminalizing substance abuse. And I mean, that's not a surprise to me that they'll probably vote against it. I'm curious how many vote against it and what districts they represent and whether their districts are in the throes of a drug crisis like so many places in our state. You know, I keep playing over and over, really in my mind when I think about this issue, some of the video that our friend Jonathan Cho at Discovery Institute has captured that shows just the true depths of human suffering on our streets. And I just don't know how you can be a public servant and look at what's happening and say, oh, the status quo is fine. No, we don't need a law on the books that criminalizes substance abuse. To me, that should just be a disqualifier for anyone who serves in public office. And so I will tell you on the show tomorrow, assuming that a vote happens today, on the show tomorrow, I will have a list of state lawmakers who voted against this. And now, if you vote against it because you think that it doesn't go far enough, I mean, I think that's silly at this stage because the option is you know, kicking the issue to cities. I'm hoping that Republicans, it's a pretty strong bill. I think Republicans had a lot of negotiating power in this. So I'm hoping everyone votes for it, but I will have a list. It'll be my little S list. I'm not saying that word. And then when they come up for re-election, I will resuscitate that list and republish it. Because I want to know who cares more about their false fake version of empathy than they do about actually saving lives and reversing this public safety crisis that we have on our streets. So I just want to let you guys know what's happening. It's happening right now. Tomorrow on the show, we'll be joined by House Minority Leader Drew Stokesbury, the new Republican leader in the House, to talk a little bit about how this all came together behind the scenes. But that is what is going on today. And again, go read the article that I published on Patreon and Locals for subscribers. You can sign up at undividedpod.com if you are not a subscriber already. Okay, we need to talk about this Durham report on Trump. We try to do like 80-20 local national news, but I think since I dump on Trump so much, I've got to give him this one. So even though I don't like Trump, I do believe that there have been some witch hunts against Donald Trump. 100%. And I'm just like, let it go. I mean, they've tried to get that man every which way possible. And except for the civil case in New York regarding sex abuse, have failed. So anyway, there was, and here's the article from Fox News. The headline is, Durham finds DOJ and FBI, quote, failed to uphold mission of strict fidelity to the law in Trump-Russia probe. So basically, if you're not familiar, so John Durham was a special counsel appointed to look into the Department of Justice and the FBI's handling of the Trump-Russia investigation, which behind the scenes was called, the investigation itself was called Crossfire Hurricane. So if you see that reference, it's referring to the code name for the investigation into whether there was any coordinated effort between Trump, the Trump campaign and Russia to influence the outcome of the 2016 presidential election. So special counsel John Durham goes in to look into basically the behind the scenes of the investigation, and he found that it was really a true failure by the FBI and that the FBI never should have launched the probe in the first place. And the report itself is 300 pages long. Certainly, I always encourage you to go directly to the source and just to read the report for yourself, although I understand some of you don't have the time to read 316 pages. But one of the, I think there's two key takeaways, is he said that he found a lot of confirmation bias, which is a problem when your job is to investigate things on the merits where, you know, the FBI or players in the investigation wanted it to be that way against Trump. So it was a confirmation bias. It's like if you've got a guy who murders his wife, right? And all the husband always did it. So cops go into the investigation, be like, the husband always did it. And so they're basically singularly focused and looking for evidence to prove their theory. And so Durham said that's kind of what seemed to happen here. And also that they didn't apply enough criticality to evidence that was given to them by Donald Trump's political opponents, like the Hillary Clinton campaign and people tied to Hillary Clinton. And they should have looked at that evidence or those leads in a far more critical way. It's the old, you know, consider the source saying. And so in that sense, he finds, and I'll just read a couple excerpts from the report. He said the department did not adequately examine or question these materials, referring to, you know, stuff provided to them by political opponents and the motivations of those providing them, even when at about the same time the director of the FBI and others learned of significant and potentially contrary intelligence. So to me, it's like some very it's some very obvious stuff that if you're doing a criminal investigation, especially one of that magnitude, that you'd really want to dot your I's and cross your T's and say, okay, is there any there? Who is providing us with our leads and with our evidence? And are we applying enough criticality to it? And the answer is obviously no. And you don't have to take it from me. And you don't have to take it to people from people who are uber fans of Donald Trump. In fact, I saw this clip from CNN's Jake Tapper.
Regardless, the report is now here. It has dropped, and it might not have produced everything of what some Republicans hoped for. It is, regardless, devastating to the FBI, and to a degree, it does exonerate Donald Trump.
Devastating to the FBI, says CNN, and to a degree exonerates Donald Trump, says CNN. And then also on the Republican side, Representative Nancy Mace, who's she does not like Donald Trump, never has. She tweeted out, I am the furthest thing from a Trump shill. But what the FBI did to him is effed. It's un-American and should never happen to anyone again. And look, you know, we have to be a nation of laws, and we can never support political persecutions. Now, again, do I believe Trump is a perfect guy? No. I believe he has a lot of moral shortcomings. I don't want him to be the president again. I never voted for him. But at the same time, every time you launch one of these probes, investigations, impeachment, and it falls flat on its face, I think you're just empowering him. And I think that's what this serves to do. I think this serves to give Trump a nice little boost as we head into the 2024 election cycle. And no one should support, no matter how much you dislike Donald Trump, no one should support a half-baked federal criminal probe into the president of the United States based in large part on information given to them from his political adversaries. That shouldn't be controversial. It shouldn't be partisan. So really interesting stuff. If you want some light reading material, there's 316 pages of that Durham report out there for you. Okay, I want to follow up on a story I talked about yesterday in our segment, Unbelievable. I had Tiffany Smiley, the 2022 Republican Senate candidate in Washington State, on the show on Sundays with Subscribers. And look, we had a great chat about her reflecting on her campaign, maybe lessons that Republicans can learn before 2024. I highly recommend you go watch the interview. It's up for subscribers. Again, you can subscribe at undividedpod.com. But one of the other things that Tiffany and I chatted about is her political action committee that she started. It's called Endeavor. And it endeavors to help get political newcomers elected to public office. And she talked about why she's so passionate about that, you know, mission, having been a political newcomer herself. Well, the day I published that interview with Tiffany Smiley, an article came out from the Seattle Times that the headline, Smiley PAC for Political Outsiders Actually Pays Campaign Debt. And the article from Jim Bruner from the Seattle Times went on to describe that, like, eight paragraphs into the small print on the Endeavor PAC website, it explains that, you know, a big chunk of the money that, you know, donations that are being collected is going to pay off, first and foremost, Tiffany Smiley's 2022 campaign debt, which right now is like around $700,000. So I published this article with Tiffany Smiley, or this interview with Tiffany Smiley, and then I see this article from the Times, and I'm like, what the hell? And Nicola had reached out Sunday night to the Tiffany Smiley camp saying, hey, you know, Brandy feels a little like, you know, caught with her pants down because she just gave Tiffany airtime to talk about Endeavor, and then now this article comes out. Can you offer a comment on the Times article, is essentially...
Yes, essentially I said that, but I mean, I really just asked for a comment on the article because they did come back and say, well, you didn't say it was specific enough of request, and that's why they said no comment, but I just asked for a comment on that article because it's, you know, we posted our interview the same day and that Seattle Times article came out, so we didn't have a comment on that, so it only made sense to cover that, right?
Right. We gave her a platform to talk about Endeavor. I need to comment on that, and exactly. I was upset on the show yesterday because we got a no comment.
Right.
And if you know me, no comment is the last comment that you should give me, because no comment says is a comment.
Right.
And I'll also note that they gave no comment to the Seattle Times.
Right.
So the Seattle Times does this whole article basically saying that suggesting that she's misleading donors in order to pay off campaign debt, and then they didn't give a comment to the Times either. So anyway, I did a rant about it yesterday on Unbelievable because I was angered by it. Like, hey, I gave you a platform to talk about Endeavor. I at least need a comment to explain what's happening in the Seattle Times article. As I said on the show yesterday, I had a conversation with Tiffany. I like Tiffany a lot. And so we had a nice little phone chat right after the show wrapped yesterday. And she explained it. She thinks the Seattle Times article is very unfair. And she explained the minutiae of how this all works. So basically, there is an overarching, like an umbrella organization. What is it called? No, I don't know if this is in front of me. The Smiley Victory Fund, SVF. There's an umbrella kind of organization. And then underneath that is Endeavor. So what Tiffany said is basically, if you are donating specifically directly to Endeavor, all that money goes to Endeavor. But if you're donating to the Smiley Victory Fund, first and foremost, you know, the first couple thousand dollars, they're going to go to pay off campaign debt, and then what's left over goes to Endeavor. So she said there is a difference there. And so the campaign sent us a statement saying, donations made directly to Endeavor PAC do not go toward debt retirement. As Tiffany stated in March, every Endeavor PAC dollar amount goes directly toward helping candidates. In addition, there is a digital fundraising program using Tiffany's campaign assets that raises money for Smiley Victory Fund, which gives an opportunity to help Tiffany retire her campaign debt and also support Endeavor PAC. And it would have been nice to have that. That's a very simple statement.
It's so simple. I don't understand why they didn't clarify that with the Times. And if the Times called, which I hope they did.
Yeah. Well, the Times says it reached out and never heard anything back from Tiffany's campaign, which is not a good strategy. And even if you think the media is going to be unfair to you, a no comment from experience.
Right.
No comment gets my alarm bells, my spidey senses all tingling.
Right.
Where I'm like, if you're not going to give a comment to the Times, you're not going to give a comment to us. It's like, so anyway, I'm glad they sent a comment. And I think the advice I had for all of you on the show yesterday is still very relevant, which is PACs can play really fast and loose with kind of where money is going, et cetera. I wish before I covered Endeavor PAC, I had read the fine print for you. So it's important when you're donating to Tiffany Smiley in some way that you're clear, is this specifically supposed to go to Endeavor? And if you want it to go to the Endeavor PAC, make sure you're donating directly to the Endeavor PAC and not the Smiley Victory Fund. Because if you donate to the Smiley Victory Fund, a chunk of that is going to go first to retire campaign debt. And then if you do anything above and beyond that, when we get into like the thousands of dollars in donations, then it's going to go to Endeavor. So with any PAC, be it for a Democrat, Republican, whatever it is, read the fine print. I think that is the lesson that we're all going to take away. So I appreciate them following up with a statement for us. I don't ever advise any politician to give a no comment. That's just terrible. Okay, coming up next, a pretty unfortunate visit to Seattle. Why do I have a pen today?
Oh, you have a pen so that you can keep track of your score in our
If there's a pen in front of me, I'll wave it around.
Yes.
I need to
set it off to the side.
Set it off to the side. Sorry. And then I point with it, which is rude. Anyway, okay. All right. Coming up next, East Coast Attorney had a pretty unbelievable visit to Seattle, or maybe it is believable. You'll decide. But first, we have added First Mark Insurance as a sponsor on the podcast, and Mike and I are officially members of the First Mark family. We did the First Mark Challenge, just like my friend Dory Monson had. He talked about them on the radio all those years. And we went to firstmarkinsurance.com. It's really simple. You just go there, click, take the First Mark Challenge. And essentially what it does is it looks at all your insurance needs and what insurance you have right now. And then First Mark will go through, they'll go out, they'll try to find the best insurance for you, the best value for you, for what you need. And then they'll come back and they'll present it to you side by side and say, here's what you have now, here's what we think you need. And then you can decide, okay, do I want to work with First Mark to go and get additional insurance or a better value on my insurance? Or do I want to stay with what I have? Here is Dave Taylor. He is not only, I found out, a Marine, which is kind of cool, but he's also the CEO of First Mark.
We believe and we say that we will help 100% of the people that we work with. Okay. Now that doesn't mean necessarily that 100% of the people we work with are going to become First Mark clients, but we believe that we will actually help 100% of the people, whether that be stay with your current carrier, but let's modify your coverage a bit so you're better protected, or ultimately, hopefully come over to First Mark. We're going to put you with a different company and give you better coverage, right? So the challenge is really challenging individuals to give us an opportunity to prove that to them. That's really what the First Mark Challenge is.
Yeah, and that's what they did for us. It was a really cool process because, you know, Dave was really honest, like, hey, you have some stuff you probably don't need or you can use a little less of, but we were definitely underinsured and we kind of knew that going in. And with Mike and I getting married in September, we thought now was a perfect time to really reassess. With everything we've worked hard for, are we protecting it properly? It's especially important if you're nearing retirement. And the First Mark Challenge doesn't cost you anything. They spend all this time with you, helping you assess your needs. And at the end of the day, if you just don't want to change insurance, you don't have to. So go and take the First Mark Challenge. Do what I've done and what hundreds of other people have done. FirstMarkInsurance.com. That's FirstMarkInsurance.com. Okay, let's get to our segment, Unbelievable. Okay, Seattle's a mess. Let's start there, just with a little statement. It's getting better. I want to be realistic but positive. I do think that Bruce Harrell has at least said the right things and is trying to make the downtown core a more pleasant place to be. But it is a reoccurring issue. I mean, we know this. You know, we were talking earlier about Jonathan Cho. He'll go down there, and it's like you get the police down on 3rd Avenue for a minute, people scatter, and they just come right back. And that is hard because you do have to have a sustained period where you're enforcing laws, where you're not allowing that behavior, or else it'll just come back. We've seen that so many times in the past. But anyway, one of the big important things that we need to bring back to Seattle, you know, we talked about Amazon workers are coming back, and that's great. But the reputation of Seattle nationally and across the world, I think, has been damaged really since 2020. I mean, when you look at the headlines and everything that's been going on here, and I think if you're deciding, do I want to visit Seattle, I think it's probably fair to say that there are a lot of people who have a negative impression of it. And some of that is justified. Are there some beautiful places in Seattle? Of course. Are there areas where you can go and avoid the dysfunction and the drug use and the crime? Sure. But the core of our city, blocks from Pike Place Market, the waterfront, which we've spent millions of dollars to improve. It's the least pleasant place to be in Seattle. And an attorney named Joshua Pond, who is in town from the East Coast, found that out the hard way. Here's a clip from a Como News story.
Within 2 hours of arriving to downtown Seattle, attorney Joshua Pond got mugged and stabbed. The knife barely missed his internal organs.
I've been to Seattle over the years, and I never would have expected what happened.
Two nights later, a person was shot and killed in the alley behind the same hotel where Josh was attacked.
Yeah, and that was the Marriott down there. And so when you hear, again, when you hear those stories, and I know this firsthand, the former head of Visit Seattle, which is the city's nonprofit tourism board, they had a lot of trouble even going back 3, 4, 5 years. You know, there would be stories about Seattle's quote-unquote street scene. And in the tourism business, that stuff gets around quickly. And they'd have conventions that were going to bring in 10,000 people, tens of millions of dollars in revenue to the city of Seattle and to our businesses that desperately need it. And they'd call Visit Seattle and be like, hey, we're not sure that we want to bring a convention there because we're not sure if it's safe. And so, you know, an incident like this where you've got this guy who says, I've been to Seattle before and it wasn't like this and I really hope they can get back on track. He's there for 2 hours and he gets shanked. Spends a night at Harborview. It's not improving Seattle's reputation. And if you can't be a tourist and be down in what is supposed to be the most vibrant place in our city, then why would you come here? I mean, Nicole, we went, remember when we were with my mom? I think I've talked about this a few times on the podcast. We went down dress shopping for my wedding dress, and we take my mom to what's the sushi place on First? Japonesa.
There you go.
Yeah, we're driving, there's just a guy ODing on the sidewalk, surrounded by paramedics. He eventually
lived. He thought he was dead.
I thought he was dead, because I've seen, you know, ODs when I was out reporting, and they look dead.
Yes.
Like gray, you know, no color in their face, and they were trying to resuscitate him, and I found out later that he did end up living, but it's like my poor mom from North Dakota.
Right.
It's like, oh, welcome to downtown Seattle, mom. We've driven like 5 blocks from the dress place to Japanesa and saw a guy at the verge of death.
And the Japanese place, the dress place had to lock their doors, and we had to let them know when we were there so they could unlock the door for us to come in.
Yeah, and so that was my mistake, is going to a dress salon in downtown Seattle, although they were very nice when we got in. Yes. Love my dress. I don't want to discourage anyone from frequenting a business downtown.
The Japanese place, actually, there was a locked side door, and somebody did come banging on that right next to our table. Do you remember that?
Oh my God, that's right!
Yeah. So it was just a good thing that door was locked.
It was like a mentally ill person who was just slamming while we're eating sushi.
Yep.
So even when all of, and I hope that it can get there. You know, the mayor of Seattle has all these plans to try to bring Seattle back to life, and Amazon's coming back. When that process is done, Seattle has an unbelievably difficult task ahead of itself to fix its reputation around the country and around the world. And that work can't start until the city is better. Because if you start that work now by going to other places saying, hey, send your tourists here, you'd be lying to them that this is a safe place to be. So not only does Seattle have a long, long path to recovery, but it has an unbelievably difficult job ahead of trying to convince people that this is a safe place to visit. All right, and that has been unbelievable for today. Okay, coming up next, we're going to dip outside of Washington State for a moment, head down to Oregon, where there is a parental rights fight happening down there. Maybe it's contagious. But first, are you in the market to sell your home? Well, why not sell it with our friend Wes Jones over at sellwithwes.com? He talked to me about what the difference is between what they can offer a home seller versus a traditional real estate agent.
We have programs in place to help you prep your home. We can help cover your repairs and even cosmetic upgrades, where you can pay for those at the closing table. We have a flexible commission structure. We have the absolute best marketing that you're going to find of any real estate agent. And there is a lot of programs and different things that we do that I go pretty in depth with on my website. So you can start by going to sellwithwest.com and go to the Sell a House feature, and you can got to go under some of the different programs, you know, that we have to learn a little bit more. If you want to check out your home's value, just plug in your, you know, your address there. And if you want to book a consultation with me, just give me a, you know, just give me a call. My cell phone is there on the website, and you know, it's super low pressure. You know, I'm going to tell you the truth if this makes sense, you know, or it doesn't for you, and I'm going to treat you fairly.
So there you have it. You can call Wes on his cell phone. Please don't prank call Wes. Don't start texting Wes. Unless you're selling your home, then definitely reach out to him. But visit sellwithwest.com. Bottom line is, if you want the most possible eyeballs on your listing, you want the highest offer for your home with the fewest possible contingencies, Wes Jones and his team at Wes Jones & Associates have a tried and true technique to do just that. So visit sellwithwest.com, sellwithwest.com, a better way to sell your home. Okay, I saw this tweet out of Oregon today, and it reminded me of the fight that's still raging in Washington State around parental rights. In Oregon, it's around House Bill 2002B. This was a tweet sent today by Republican Representative Ed Deal. Told Nicole I really like his Twitter handle. It's Real Deal. Nice. He's a Republican. I think he represents the 17th district, if that means anything to you in Oregon, probably not. And he tweeted, this morning on the Capitol steps, 300 plus people turned out to express their opposition to House Bill 2002B. This isn't a Republican issue or a Democrat issue. This is an Oregon issue. And Oregon parents are united in opposition to this extreme bill that cuts, that cuts at the heart of parental rights. And it is, it was pretty good showing down in Oregon. And so I got to, and Republicans in Oregon have used, and you've probably heard on the news before, this tactic where they can delay and walk out, et cetera. And so they're opposing this particular bill. And I read up on it, and I think there's a couple things at play here. There are some shades of what has happened in Washington State with Senate Bill 5599. And, you know, letting your kids go to a shelter without notifying your parents of your location. I also think that one of the things that got confusing in our fight and debate over that here is that also playing out when it comes to House Bill 2002B, in that in Oregon, just like in Washington, kids, you know, as young as 13 or even younger, already have some pretty remarkable latitude to make decisions around gender care and reproductive rights without the consent of their parents. And in the Senate Bill 5599 debate in Washington, I think that got conflated a little bit, where that bill did not expand what a child could do without parental consent. It just gave them an easier avenue to do it without their parents knowing about it. But I think it renewed the debate in Washington State around, should kids be able to do these things without parental consent? And I think that's a totally legitimate debate, but it's not something that got expanded in Senate Bill 5599. And a similar thing is happening down in Oregon with this bill, is that I think a lot of the anger actually goes back to laws that are already on the books in Oregon, which allow kids to make certain decisions around reproductive care or gender care without parental consent. And then this bill, 2002B, just kind of solidifies it and makes it easier and protects them even further. And so I think that you're continuing to have, and you're going to continue to have in Washington, in Oregon, and hopefully in a lot of other states, this conversation about, okay, why is the government continuing to cut parents out of the decision-making in their kids' lives? And is that really healthy? And I hope actually in Washington State and Oregon, it might lead to a reassessment of some of these laws that are already on the books and have been for years around what kids can do without their parents knowing about it. And I really think, you know, to me, there's kind of this healthy middle ground here where, sure, if you're going to say, let's give kids the right to do these things without their parents having to actually sign on the dotted line, but I think you can do that while still notifying parents and still saying, hey, your kid can do this whether you approve or not, but your child is getting this sort of care. Your child had an abortion. Your child is getting gender hormone therapy. Because I think it's really unhealthy territory to let a kid who's 14 or 13 or 15 do those things And then as a parent, you have no idea it happened. And you can imagine the mental, emotional distress your child is going through because they got an abortion or they're getting gender hormone therapy. And you, as a parent, are like, what's going on with my kid? I mean, they're upset or they're acting different. And you don't really know that they're going through these things. And so to me, it's a really common sense place to be. I mean, I think parents should have to consent. But if we're not willing to unwind things that far, then perhaps we're willing to say, okay, kids, you can still do these things that are protected under the law, but medical providers need to notify your parents so your parents can understand what's going on in your life. So anyway, I just thought I'd tee you up to the fact that this is going on down in Oregon as well, and I hope that this continues to be a topic of conversation. Okay, coming up next, I'm taking my live citizenship test. I'm super nervous. I have a poll going. First of all, I wish I could tell who answered what in the poll, because I'd delete all of you. It says, the question is, will Brandy pass her citizenship test? 79% say yes. 21% say no.
I think those 21% have a lot of faith in me picking the hard questions.
Haters. Well, now I'm super nervous. Anyway, okay, so we'll do that coming up next. So excited. But first, I've been talking a lot about the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. I just answered an email someone sent me about, hey, does this really work? Have you seen me? Yeah, it works great. I'm down 35 pounds on the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic plan. Started in beginning of November, lost most of that before 2023 even started. And now I'm just feeling great heading into summer. I went wine tasting this weekend and I wore this cute little dress I hadn't worn in a while. And I was like, man, I just feel good. You know, summer, you wear in fewer clothes. You just want to feel good about yourself. So what? It's May 16th? Man, by July, you could be looking and feeling much better. So check out eastsideweightlossclinic.com. That's eastsideweightlossclinic.com. And the easiest way to do it is just to schedule a free 15-minute consultation online. You just 15 minutes with Dr. Coogan. He'll tell you what's up, whether the program's right for you. No prepackaged meals, no counting calories, no hypnosis, no stringent exercise routines. It's not magic. You do have to eat less, I will tell you. But I was able to stick to it like 99% for 60 days, and I lost more than 30 pounds, which was awesome.
Sorry, I left that graphic up a while. Whoops.
The one of me, obese.
Yeah, we need to update that graphic.
Oh, because I'm down actually 36 pounds now?
Yes.
Okay. I should have taken a picture in my cute dress.
And why does the bigger picture have to be bigger?
Because it's just me, large and in charge. Look, I'm trying to do right by our sponsors.
Fair.
That's why I'm willing to show a picture of me looking like that. I went out in public like that. So anyway.
You're beautiful, Brandy.
People of all sizes are beautiful. We're not body shaming here, right. But we want everyone to feel happy and healthy and confident in their own skin. Anyway. All right. So I'm going to take 10 questions of a live citizenship by popular demand. Nicole, why don't you come on and explain the process here.
Okay, so here's what we've got. We've got questions from the U.S. Citizenship and Immigration Services website.
Okay, so this is legit. These are the questions.
Official. This is the study guide, in other words, for these tests that they give people looking to be citizens of the United States of America.
Okay.
Obviously, great. They don't upgrade every year.
Well, history doesn't change that much.
2008 version, but it was updated in 21.
I'm surprised it hasn't been updated to add woke wording to everything.
It's coming.
So and this is how this goes, right? It's not a written test. It's an oral exam for immigrants.
Yes. So this is a 100-question study guide. Okay. And the person interviewing the person who would like to become a citizen picks 10 questions, and you have to get 6 out of the 10 right to become a citizen.
Okay. I'm worried because I don't do well under pressure, and I'm also worried some of them might be, like, subjective.
No. I think you're overthinking it.
Okay. Okay, I don't want to be embarrassed. I have an American flag behind me. You know how embarrassing it would be if I failed the citizenship test?
I know. I did pick what I would consider, and I mean, one of the questions on there was, who is President of the United States of America?
Oh, okay.
So that's
you didn't
what
pick
we're
those.
Working with
okay.
here. And
all
I'm
right.
not picking those.
Let's start with question number one.
Question number one. How many amendments does the Constitution have?
My late father would roll over in his grave if I got this wrong. It's 27.
Yay.
Ding, ding, oh, ding, okay. Ding, 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 ding. I just need 6 right. Okay, that's 1 for me. This is really fun. Okay.
I like
it. Well, because I'm one for one. Okay.
Question number two. The House of Representatives has how many voting members?
It's interesting that they say voting members, because, I mean, it's 435, right? Right?
Ding, 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 ding.
Okay. Oh, my gosh. All right. That's two. I'm, like, crying. I'm just nervous. I don't like failure.
You're doing very well.
I love America. What can I say? Okay.
Right. Question number three. Under the Constitution, some powers belong to the states. What is one power of the states?
Something only the states can do?
What power is given to the states, if that makes a little more sense?
I mean,
there are multiple things, but so,
like, education? Is that one? Is that what they mean by powers to the states? Education. Oh, good. Man. Okay.
Yeah. So education, protection, as in police,
okay,
safety, fire department, driver's licenses, and zoning and land use.
I just didn't, the wording of that is weird. What power belongs to the states?
Right.
But I get it. Okay. I got that one. All right. Three for three.
Well done. Well done.
All right.
Okay. Number four.
Okay.
You're almost to citizenship.
I can't remember the last time I took a test. Okay.
What is one promise you make when you become a United States citizen?
Oh, I could probably name a couple.
Okay.
Protect and uphold the Constitution of the United States, renounce foreign allegiances, renounce foreign citizenships, follow the Constitution, follow the laws.
Fancy wording, but yes.
Okay. Oh, well, I know.
Defend the Constitution. Obey the laws. Serve in the military if needed.
If needed. Okay.
Serve the nation and be loyal to the United States.
Okay. Sergeant Pickle says, oh, crap, I'm 0 for 3.
Come on, man.
I'm 4 for 4. There's a little delay on the YouTube, which is good because I'm assuming people would jump in and try to give me the answers.
Right,
but there's
like
a 30-second delay or something.
Right.
Okay.
Okay.
4 for 4.
Number 5.
All right.
Why did the colonists fight
the British?
Mm-hmm.
Oh, there's got to be more than one reason. See, this is subjective.
I believe there's three choices on this one.
Oh my gosh. Why did the colonists fight the British? I mean, for their independence from the crown. Is that what you mean by the why?
High taxes, army stay. The British army stayed in their housing, so they wanted better boarding and quartering, and then they didn't have
self-government. So that's so I
I'll
get that right, right? Because
one.
They wanted independence from the
yes.
crown. Okay, all right, I'm 5 for 5. Okay.
Oh man. Okay, we're on to
Two Ladies Midwest Adventures says Brandy keeps whipping the pen around. I know. As soon as this segment's done, I'm gonna throw the pen on the ground. Okay, I'm gonna poke an eye out.
Okay, number
six.
We're on six. When was the Constitution written?
Oh, written or?
Written.
Oh, man. Written is hard. Not ratified?
I thought this might be the, well, maybe you could, I'm not sure the difference, so.
So,
might be the same year you're
1776
thinking.
Was the Mm-mm. Declaration of Independence.
Correct.
And the Constitution would have come after that. Correct?
I believe so.
Oh, Jesus. 1770.
Final answer.
1777. 1787. 1787. Son of a... Okay. That's a hard one.
I knew that was going to be the hardest one because I didn't know it.
Oh, man. Okay, so I'm 5 for 6.
Yep.
Okay.
One more, though, when you get citizenship.
All right, I still want to go through all 10 of them.
What
was Benjamin Franklin famous for? What
yes.
is one thing?
One thing.
So I can't say his spectacles, his eyeglasses. Let's see. He was, there's so many things. He was an inventor. He was part of the Constitutional Convention. He helped write the Declaration of Independence.
Okay, are you done?
Yeah. He was a
Yes.
Oh, okay,
US diplomat. Oldest member of the Constitutional Convention.
Yeah, he was part of the Constitutional Convention.
First Postmaster General.
Oh, I got multiple. You looked at me like I was getting that wrong. Okay, I'm 6 for 7. We might as well finish it out. Three more. I'm feeling good about this.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, but you are a citizen. That's good.
I am officially allowed to be a citizen.
Allowed. Uh-huh.
Thank you. Okay, so I've passed.
Who was president during World War One?
Oh, during World War One, it would have been Eisenhower. No. FDR. During World War One,
yeah,
was that World War Two? It wasn't. who was president during World War One? It wasn't Eisenhower. Are you sure? Who was president?
Wilson. During
Woodrow Wilson. Who cares about Woodrow Wilson? How far off am I? Oh, God. Okay. Man, I'm 6 for 8. Oh, everybody on the chat knew. Okay. All right. 2 more. These are hard.
Okay. Well, like I said, they're probably what I would consider the hardest of the whole test. I'm having 100 fun. Questions.
We should do this every week.
I like it. Okay. Number 9.
During the Cold War, what was the main concern of the United... Communism. Communist Russia.
Well done.
Ah, okay. Communism is usually the concern. All right, so I'm 7 for 9. Okay. Okay. No, I'm... Yeah, 7 for 9. One more.
Number 10. This is the geography portion.
Name one of the 2 longest rivers in the United States. The longest. The Mississippi? Is that one of them? Why would an immigrant need to know that? The Missouri and the Mississippi. Okay, I'm 8 of 10. I think that's pretty good.
That's pretty good.
For not having studied, you know, not having been in school for a while. 8 of 10. That was fun.
The rest of them were, yeah, name your governor. Name why are there 50 stars on the flag?
Like, gotcha. Meh.
So I give you some good ones.
That was a blast. Thanks for getting that together, Nicole.
Absolutely.
Okay, I don't feel less mortified. If I'd gotten the constitutional questions wrong, I would have had to go pray over my dad's ashes.
And you are able to be a citizen.
Great, they can't take away. Okay, shall we get to comments? But first, before we do that, we have, we've got regular commenters on the show and on subscribers and all that. And so there was one named Crafty Grandma Crispy. And yes. I was like, what kind of weird name is that? And so you heard from Crafty Grandma Crispy, who explains she does arts and crafts.
Yes.
Well, she sent us something in the mail.
She did.
So we got a little thank you card. It's signed Crafty Grandma Crispy. Thank you for all that you do. I truly believe it is making a difference. I appreciate you. And of course, it's a crafty card.
Well, that is adorable. See that.
And then I already opened mine. Nicole, okay. She crafted us something.
I know, like a keychain sticking out. A
little keychain.
Oh, it's an undivided keychain. Oh my gosh, look at that.
It's an undivided keychain. On the back it says, committed to giving common sense a comeback. And it's in our font.
We might need to
look at this.
Hire her to make some merch for us.
Oh, I know, look at this. Oh my God, Crafty Grandma Crispy. This is so nice. Why don't the rest of you send us gifts? This is really nice. I saw it last night. I almost cried. I was like, that is so sweet. It's going on my keychain.
It is the first merch.
It's the first merch. I love it. I love it so much.
I love it.
It's going on my keychain. Thank you, Crafty Grandma Crispy. Okay. All right. Let me get to some comments. Lieutenant Dan, regarding yesterday's show with Olga running for Seattle City Council District 7, some people in Seattle are taking issue with her voting record for not participating in special elections. Seems like nitpicking. Yeah, I mean, I think voting history is important. I think you want someone who has been part of the process before. You know, we talked to Raul Garcia, who's running for governor, who had to answer for his bad voting record when he ran in 2020 because he hadn't voted since 2012. At the same time, I think when you're talking about special elections, are we really going to get that nitpicky of people who haven't voted in super, super off elections? I think there's more to like about Olga than that. But yeah, I mean, I think you always have to answer for instance, if I ever ran for something, I have been great, every election for the past probably 6 or 7 years. But before that, I really bought into the notion that journalists shouldn't vote in elections to maintain some feeling of propriety. And then I was like, that's stupid. I think a journalism professor told me that. And I'm like, that's dumb. And so I started voting. Okay, let's see. Whidbey Island Waterfowl. I love these names. Okay, good. Had a construction friend working in Seattle stabbed by a needle. Oh my gosh. See, that's mortifying. Parks with your kids in Seattle. That's terrifying. Kathy writes, I am on Donald Trump in the report that just came out. I'm also not a fan of Trump, but I also agree that... this has stink all over it. Why are they so afraid of Trump? I think it's easy to have kind of a boogeyman. And again, I think he's a morally bankrupt person for other reasons. But at this point, you're only helping the guy. And maybe that's what they want. maybe Democrats want to help the guy because they think he's more beatable. They need a boogeyman to say, look over there so you avoid all the crap we're doing. And the media, he's ratings gold for them. Of course the media likes it. Look at CNN. Oh, Trump's the worst president ever. Let's have a one-hour town hall with him. Oh, my gosh. Okay. Nick says, man, my almost six-year-old wants to stay at a hotel in Seattle and go to the Science Center, but all these stories make me double guess if we should. Why does it have to be like this? That's so sad because I used to take my nephew to the Science Center, and it's so cute. I would say there's a couple hotels like right by there and you should be okay, or just like drive. But who am I to tell a parent whether it's safe downtown for their kid? Okay. Jeffrey says, Brandy, why do you continue to ignore Florida Senate Bill 254 and its impact on parental rights? I'm not sure I know about it. I don't like comments like that though, Jeffrey, where it's like, why are you ignoring this? I don't even know about it. So it's like, I saw a comment on Twitter. Why do you, from the Yakima GOP, why do you refuse to interview Semi Bird for your show? And it's like, I haven't refused to interview him. Like, mm-hmm. We just started doing interviews on gubernatorial candidates, and I want to see what kind of fundraising he does.
And also, I mean, Oregon's a little bit closer, and we can't do every state. We can't do every bill in every state.
We could do it. On Florida Report.
Yes.
But yeah, it's, I just hate when, and I don't, Jeffrey, love you. But I'm also like, people are always like, why do you refuse to cover this? And it's like, why do you even know about it? Or like, I don't know.
We only have an hour show 4 days a week.
Jeffrey, I'll tell you this. I will look into it. Nicole, you jot that. Actually, I have a pen. I said I'd get rid of my pen.
Florida Report. We'll look into the bill.
Yeah. Okay. I'll look into it. Senate Bill 254. I care about parental rights. So if that's a good one. Although, you know, I don't agree with some of the stuff that's been happening in Republican states that to me have different. It's a different page of the same book. When you say, oh, we're going to ban these sorts of procedures for kids under 18. It's like, okay. So in our state, they're going to take parents out of it completely and say kids can do it. And then in other states, they're going to tell parents, you don't even have a right as a parent to decide whether your kid can do it. That to me doesn't smell well either. Okay, let me see. Kathy, on my stellar performance on my citizenship exam, everyone in the Biden administration needs to take this test. You'd hope that they could pass it. Matt Gilbert on why haven't you guys sent me gifts? He said, I'm pretty sure I have sent gifts. That's true, Matt. Matt gave me this, my Looking Glass Brandy album, which Matt, I cherish. That's why it's in the shot. There are other bookshelves that aren't in the shot. This one's front and center. So sorry, Matt. You're right. Kyle said, I had to take the citizenship test to pass my high school AP government class. I clearly don't remember much. Sergeant Pickles says he ended up 5 out of 10, but I was darn close on a couple more. Not too bad.
Close. That doesn't count. Sorry.
Bob says,
you're Bob out. Says,
thanks, Brandy. Eisenhower was president when I was born. I'm sorry. I couldn't think of Woodrow Wilson, and I should have, because there's a documentary coming out about him and World War I. And I've seen the trailer for it a million times, and I don't know why I couldn't think of Woodrow Wilson. What am I missing here? Bryce says on the Trump Durham report on Patreon, thank you for being a subscriber, Bryce Philippi. With the release of the Durham report, it's interesting to see how the different news media spins it. MSNBC said it was a nothing burger. CNN, as you said today, said it was a bombshell against the FBI. And Fox said it was a complete failure of the government. My biggest fear is the weaponization of the FBI against a sitting president. Aren't those called coups in a banana republic? And when can we ever expect those to be brought to justice? How can we ever have free and fair elections again after seeing such corruption of government and journalists? I fear for our republic. And I share that concern as well. I mean, you have to have an avenue through which a president who is truly corrupt and dangerous can be removed from office. I mean, it is a government of the people, by the people, for the people. I share your concern about when you have such a failure of the FBI to, as I said earlier, apply an extra added level of scrutiny to information being given to them by a president's political adversary, or a candidate's political adversary, rather, in this instance, then that is really concerning. And that's why it should be a bipartisan concern. You never want an entity of the government to influence an election or to be able to be used by political adversaries against someone. And so I think that's the concern, and it is an absolutely legitimate concern. Okay, I think that was all the comments we're going to read for today. That was really fun with everything. Thank you again, Crafty Grandma Crispy. This is going to help me keep track of my keys. Okay, let's get to our closing sanity check for today. What did I tell you guys about not letting things steal your happiness? The Bud Light thing with the trans activist Dylan Mulvaney. I get it 100%. And I also do not think it's been an example of cancel culture. I think it has been people saying, I'm not going to buy Bud Light. And that's a very powerful tool. And we've seen the impact that it's had on Bud Light just falling over themselves in desperation. Now, there's an update to this that I feel like is starting to border on whiny, cancel-y, culture-y, like you're adopting some things of the far left that I don't particularly like. And that is now people speaking out against Miller Lite. So Miller Lite had a commercial, and I don't think it's a particularly new commercial.
I think it came out in March. It was just before the Bud Light one.
It was a video, and it has this actress in it. And I can't remember what show she's in, but it's actually a show I think is very funny. But it's being criticized now for being too woke. Here's a clip of it.
Here's a little known fact. Women were among the very first to brew beer ever. From Mesopotamia to the Middle Ages to colonial America, women were the ones doing the brewing. Centuries later, how did the industry pay homage to the founding mothers of beer? They put us in bikinis. Wow. Look at this. Wild. It's time beer made it up to women. So today, Miller Lite is on a mission to clean up not just their but the whole beer industry's shit. Miller Lite has been scouring the internet for all this shit and buying it back so that they can turn it into good shit for women brewers.
Okay. It's just not an interesting commercial. And it's like they're taking all these like bikini-clad women drinking beer posters and shredding them down to be compost.
Yes.
I guess.
Then they're going to make beer out of it.
Cool. Okay. Mm-hmm. So it's just a dumb commercial to begin with. But apparently now this has now re-energized people who have already succeeded in just ruining Bud Light. Now they're like, what about this Miller Lite commercial that was already on the air? And then some folks were posting a picture of that actress next to Hillary Clinton, which I actually think, I'm trying to remember the show that she's in, but Hillary Clinton did an appearance on that show. And so I don't know if that's a still from that, but it's like, okay.
You're tying it to that.
To me, it's just too much. It's like, you just, at that point, it feels like you have to find a reason to be angry. Is it a dumb commercial? Sure.
Yeah.
But it is not on the same level of what happened with Dylan Mulvaney mocking women in her Bud Light ad, almost making a parody of women, making a joke out of women. So I think it's just different. And like Dylan Mulvaney being a model for sports bras, it's like, come on, okay? But this is just like, okay, so you basically just don't like the ad.
Right. I think it's a little bit offensive to say to Farrah Fawcett, who was in that photo that she like tears down and calls terrible. It's a little bit offensive to her because I think she's pretty proud of that picture. And, you know, I think you talked yesterday about being proud of your bikini body.
Right. It's nothing
you
to be.
It doesn't have to be gross or disgusting pictures. I get it. You're saying you're sexualizing the beer. But that's not really how this is coming across. You're saying gross to women in bikinis.
Yeah, and I get it. That the ad is just dumb.
It's just dumb.
Like, who are you appealing to? And there's nothing wrong with being proud of your bikini body and using it to model for beer. I just don't think that making this round two of their fight against Bud Light, I just think it comes across as petty and a little leftist.
Well, and I think that leftist-ish. The thing about Bud Light is, I think that there's a lot of people in this country that have been frustrated with an agenda pushed on them.
Yeah.
And this was a way to push back. So it's not, I mean, you know, Dylan, whatever, the trans, you know, the can of beer with a trans person on it. I don't think it's really about that. It's about an agenda being pushed on people. And this was an effective way to finally be able to push back and get attention for it, because people are pushing back in school board meetings. People are pushing back in other ways, and it's not getting the kind of attention that this is getting. And so I think this was just a way to push back on the trans agenda. And it's not to say you can't live the way you want to live. It's the agenda being pushed on their kids and them. when they're just trying to drink a beer.
Right. I agree 100% on all that about Bud Light. I think the Miller Lite false outrage waters that down.
I agree.
Waters it down like a can of Bud Light.
Yep, yep.
Because it's like, you guys were so successful with Bud Light, and you're right. It is an avenue where they could bring attention to the ridiculousness of this issue in a way that actually had an outcome that was actually effective. And now it's like, let's go back in time and figure out what other crappy beer commercials there were, right, and the woke commercials, and let's like resuscitate them.
And I think the idea on how to gauge if this works is to see what happens in the future. So don't go backwards.
Right.
Go forward. See if it continues to work. See if you feel like your voice is being heard by not drinking Bud Light, and think forward.
Yeah, and if 100%, because I'm trying to think when the anger at Bud Light started in earnest. Now, had Miller Lite released this ad after all this stuff with Bud Light, then it's like, are you kidding me? I could see it being different. But you're right. Why go back and like, now let's go find what other beer companies wronged us by being too woke? Right. Silly. Maintain your sanity, people, and pick your battles wisely. All right, that has been it for today's episode of Undivided. A story that popped up before we started the live show today, Mark Doans, the CEO of the Regional Homelessness Authority, is stepping down. We wanted to make sure that we kind of gave some context to all of that, so we'll talk about it on the show tomorrow. I think it's very interesting. I wonder what it had to do with it. If it had anything to do with the meeting where the guy shouted defending a sex offender, maybe things can get too crazy in Seattle. So we'll talk about that on the show tomorrow. In the meantime, if you have not become an Undivided subscriber already, please do sign up. Help us support this mission and movement to give common sense a comeback for as little as $5 a month. You can go to undividedpod.com. There's a little button you can click to sign up on Patreon or Locals. You can also find out how to watch clips from the show, how to listen to the show via podcast, or how to reach out to Nicole and I. As always, thank you all for being here. And as I said, thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. We'll see you tomorrow.